This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Intel makes Sandy Bridge chips street legal.
And it's Noah big deal for IBM.
Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for March 9th, 2012. Available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined by Addison Snell of Intersect 360 Research. Hey, good morning, Addison.
Good morning, Michael.
Well, we saw the big news finally drop from Intel. They've been waiting on this one for a while, but they released this Sandy Bridge server chips.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago, we started getting invitations to a super secret Intel event, and we all wondered what it could possibly be.
Yeah, maybe the worst kept secret in the industry, and I can't remember how long. I mean, they've been they've been sitting on these chips for at least 6 months. We know there's like 20,000 already deployed out there, and at HPC centers, like over 10 right. systems, and everybody knew this was coming. It's just they decided to wait until March to announce them.
Right. Well, they were already on the top 500 list that came out in November. So
we
knew Sandy Bridge was coming, but there was a limit to what we could say about them. They're not Sandy Bridge anymore. They're now officially the Xeon E5 processors, right?
Right. E5 2600s are these current ones. These are the dual socket versions. And they go up to 8 cores at the top end. And yeah, They announced them, and everybody else, I think every other server vendor out there that has an Intel story to tell, they announced their server machines for those chips as well.
Yeah, and so we saw the flurry of press releases come out. You know, it was very convenient for us up here, Michael. The Intel had their launch event at the very nice event at the Jewish Contemporary Museum in San Francisco, which was only a block away from the Marriott Marquis where Predictive Analytics World was being held, and I was covering that as well. A lot of people at that event who were doing HPC, whether they realized it or not, but also got to cover the Sandy Bridge launch. While we were up there.
Yeah, I saw that on webcast from my perch here in San Diego, but that kind of looked like fun. It was basically the dog and pony show for the Sandy Bridge EP chips, but we got to see the new general manager of the data center group, Diane Bryant, talk about it and bring out some of the early customers out there to talk about their experiences.
Yeah, so it was a good event. Diane did a great job. They had the customers in there. And, you know, we already knew a lot about this processor, of course, but now we're finally able to talk about it with some specifics about it. For me, the biggest news from an HPC perspective is the vector extensions that allow for doubling of flops per clock, which they claim translated into an 80% gain in floating point performance. That was as measured by their best spec FP rate benchmark on a dual socket system.
Right, and that compares to their basically their Westmere dual socket chips, and they were touting right the 80% mark. But yeah, obviously your application's not always going to get that. In fact, that's probably the maximum you would ever get, and probably not even that. The guy from DreamWorks up there says they got a 35% boost on their rendering application using the new hardware, but that was very welcome to him because that's a big boost for a single application.
Sure. Well, and you do have to recompile to get those the vector extensions in there, but that's nothing new for a new processor. You expect to recompile.
Well, in certain cases, it might even be a little trickier than that. I mean, these are the double wide AVX instructions. If you have just the regular legacy code, you might be able to do the compiler might be able to do auto vectorization and take advantage of that. But in some cases, you might actually need to tweak the code to get the optimal performance out of these things.
Yeah, it might get into a little bit of loop reordering or things of that nature.
Yeah, it's a little bit trickier, but I mean, basically same thing on the Intel side. They went to a 256 wide instruction, floating point instruction as well, but these are, you know, presumably they could as much as double the floating point performance for just sort of a very math intensive application, but a little work involved, but this is quite a big performance boost and probably welcome news for a lot of HPC applications.
Yeah. Now, no mention of cores at all or the specific configurations during the launch event itself, although they did have a spec sheet. It was available for Q&A afterwards. That seems like these come in 2s, 4s, 6s, and 8s, right?
Right. They go all the way down to 2 with, I think there's one 2-core part, and then most of them are 8 cores and 6 cores and some quad cores in there too, and various clock speeds. I think the fastest clock is at 4, in fact, 4-core, which makes sense.
Right.
The other ones are, you know, close to 3 gigahertz at the 8-core level. That's a lot of cores. You can't really crank the clock up that much. So, in fact, the clock rates are no faster. In fact, they're a little slower than the top rates on the Westmere chips even. So,
yeah, it's getting to where it's harder to compare processor chips side by side because they come in so many different frequencies, so many different core counts.
Right.
You get different amount of bandwidth on the bus, and it does vary quite a bit. It's hard to put this right next to an AMD chip and say what the side-by-side comparison is.
Right. I mean, the AMD chips, the Interlagos at this level has 16 cores, although those cores are a little bit defined a little bit differently. You know, there were some benchmarks. One publication, Nantech, ran some LS Dyna benchmarks, and you know, the new Sandy Bridge chips came out on top over the AMD chips, and certainly the older Westmere chips. They were the fastest. So yeah, it's hard to talk about the cores and the clocks and things of that nature, since there's sort of so many features and components to these things now. It's best just to run the applications and see what falls out.
Right. Now, another thing they did talk about is that it was a change, is they've made this move to what they're calling integrated I.O. And
right.
The I.O. hub is no longer separate. That's been moved on chip. And the Xeon E5 hub now, through integrated I.O., connects directly to the network adapter over PCI Express 3.0, which itself is an upgrade from PCI Express 2.
Right. Right, and that's integrated as well. The PCI lanes are on the chip, and right, like you said, the I/O hub logic is now on the chip as well. And that's I think they're saying you can much reduce latency because of that, much better bandwidth, and we'll see how that works out. But that actually be very important news, especially for a lot of HPC applications that rely on these low latency interconnects and low latency storage devices to do their work. So that might be rather interesting feature for a lot of applications we're concerned about.
Right. Now, the launch itself, maybe I shouldn't be surprised, but they had a lot of talk about cloud throughout the introduction and all the new connected devices and their cloud 2015 vision.
Sure.
How did you relate that to the processor launch?
Well, I mean, I think that's a marketing thing. I mean, the cloud is their volume market now. It's not even the enterprise anymore. I mean, the cloud is where they're looking to sell these chips in volume. So I think the emphasis was on that.
I guess I kind of didn't get it. The cloud is buying processors now? You know what I mean?
The cloud? Well, I mean,
We're selling chips into the cloud. What does that mean? Right?
Well, cloud providers, I mean, they're trying to entice the Microsoft and the Googles and the Amazons
right.
of the world to buy these things and saying, hey, you can consolidate your data center, get a lot better performance, and you know, densify everything just because we're, you know, more performance out of these things. So
I mean, that kind of has to be it, right? That they're talking about the cloud providers themselves as opposed to all of the connected devices that are in the cloud, a lot of which aren't even x86 types of devices because they're phones and tablets.
Right, right. Now, that reminds me, I mean, one of the things Diane talked about was these aren't just going into servers. They're actually selling these chips into network boxes and to storage boxes too. In fact,
that's
she said
right.
there's more than 400 design wins across those three areas: servers, storage, and network, where the new the E5 2600 CPUs were picked up. So that's really good news for Intel, because the network boxes, especially, and well, even the storage boxes, they represent a very big market for these chips now.
Yeah, that thanks for mentioning that. That was interesting, because we're used to having them show, here are all the server OEMs who are going to support the processor, but then they also had a list of storage OEMs and a list of networking OEMs, and you know, all the major and all the minor players are there on the slide.
Right, and I have a feeling that integrated I/O probably played into that as well and made those chips even more attractive to some of those applications. Now, I will say, I mean, that integration doesn't come for free. I mean, you're using up, you know, die space and heat, And, you know, maybe this is one of the reasons why they really couldn't crank the clock up on these chips for maybe what the server vendors would want and the server right. customers. They basically put more and more onto the chip to make it more functional, but they really couldn't do much computational-wise as far as clock rates. I mean, they more cores, but not much else.
Well, let's read into that a little bit here. They have not ramped the clock rate way up. They have not ramped the core count way up. Pointed out, I think their previous Westmere's had 6, now we're at 8, but you know they're not at 12 or 16.
Oh.
So, you know, what does this mean on the competitive landscape?
Well, I mean, you've got AMD with 16, but those cores are a little bit different. It's hard to even compare them one-to-one because they sort of share the same floating point unit. In a way, I would almost consider that an 8 core. I mean, I think this is sort of user-driven. A lot of applications can't use more than a handful of cores in an SMP fashion on a CPU. So there's not a whole lot of demand to like just keep adding cores to something without the application
right.
being able to take advantage of that, because there's the memory bandwidth problem for one thing. I mean, they upgraded the memory subsystem, but there's still that bottleneck there, and they can't just add cores without increasing all the other communication links to those cores as well.
Yeah, we also might be getting to a practical limit as to how much memory per node you can practically configure. You know, we've seen a doubling and redoubling of memory per node as people try to keep memory per core constant. So I agree with you. You're starting to see a practical limit to what an application, what most applications are going to do in terms of parallelism on the socket.
Right.
And then for applications that really can take advantage of many cores, that's where you're going to go to a Knight's Corner type of deployment or perhaps some other type of accelerator that provides all those cores.
Right. Now that said, all those 10 supercomputers that made it onto the top 500 list, they went for the 8-core version, which is the highest core version of this. They didn't go for the 4-core or the 6-core. They could have gotten a little faster clock on those.
Linpack is very parallel is why.
Right? Yeah, I mean, but they bought these supercomputers presumably to run something other than Linpack. Those are real honest-to-God machines that are being deployed at like those 10 sites. So
yeah, I'll argue the other side of that, though. If Intel's going to give them early access for a top 500 run, they want to give them a part that's going to score way up there, right?
Well,
so Intel's going to push those 8 cores.
Yeah, maybe. Although, and maybe they didn't even have the other ones in production 6 months ago, so maybe that was their only choice. But yeah, I thought that was interesting. And yeah, your point about the upcoming Knight's Corner chip with, you know, they're going to have 50-plus cores, I think that'll be the sort of the platform they're going to push for the extreme sort of parallelism that entails. Now, I noticed there was a slide there at the end where Diane talked about, you know, sort of the historical context of this. She said since 2000, the year 2000, they've been able to increase performance 100 times on the Xeon line. So that's like 12 years ago, and that's great. But then you think about HPC, and that's like 10 times slower than the pace of performance that we're using. So it was sort of a damning slide for HPC, because it's basically saying, well, you can't really rely on just processor speed on our product portfolio to, you know, drive HPC. You're going to have to come up with something else that's going to make up that other order of magnitude speed improvement you need.
Well, I don't think you've ever in HPC been able to rely only on the processor improvement to drive your top end performance improvement. You've had within the clustering space, you've had switches that can handle more nodes and SMPs. You climb to larger SMPs,
right.
You get faster networks. Even going back to vectors, it wasn't about the speed of the processor.
Right, right. And that's how people are making it up. They're just putting more chips onto a system. Or nowadays, they're adding these accelerators. So they're sort of been attacked from twofold. I mean, the problem with just putting more and more CPUs into a system is it's harder to manage, whether it's a cluster or even SMP system. It's just more difficult. People optimally would want the fastest chip they could get, and it would just be one of them. That would be the easiest one to program. So yeah, so you see, as great as Xeon has done here, we're going to still need to either scale out or scale up with accelerators to meet the needs of the supercomputing industry.
Well, and we're seeing the supercomputing industry adopt, right? We had a lot of them already on the top 500 list. The server vendors and other OEMs were all ready with their own press releases for their servers or their platforms that included the Sandy Bridge or the E5 2600 Xeon processors. The one in particular, though, that jumped out that you found was this deal IBM has with NOAA.
Right. They announced, IBM announced this, I guess, a day after the Intel news. They didn't really talk about the E5 chip in this news, but we'll find out later it has something to do with this. But IBM announced a huge contract with NOAA to support their HPC facility and infrastructure there. It was $502 million, half $1 billion over 10 years. That's with all options. So I have a feeling it's probably half that for the first part that's more or less guaranteed, but then if they pick up all the options.
Only a quarter of $1 billion for the first 5 years, right? Yeah. And then another quarter of $1 billion for the next 5 years. Presumably, that's how it's split up.
Yeah, and not all of this is for hardware. In fact, probably very little of it, or not very little of it, but just a significant chunk, because they're going to be doing the managed services side of this and the data center management, the application support, and a few other things. So it's
some integration. And then even within the products, you've got the iDataPlex servers, you've got IBM storage is in there. Right. They've got GPFS running over the whole thing. So IBM's got a lot of stuff going in here.
Right. And although the press release was pretty spare, they didn't talk about the hardware that was going into this. The Register picked up on it and found out that, sure enough, these were going to be the new Sandy Bridge E5 processors that are going to be part of that new system. And eventually, or at least initially, it's going to be, you know, close to 150 teraflops. And that's the new iDataPlex. So, yeah, so they're going to show up there, obviously. I mean, this isn't the only place we're going to see these new Intel chips, but that's going to be a nice debut for those for IBM, at least.
Yeah, so this is at National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA. So IBM's signing on for 5, maybe 10 years of weather forecasting here.
Yeah, I think NOAA's got, they've got a few other systems. I know they've got some from Cray at some of their other facilities, but IBM's been a customer, and they went back and got some more, and it'll be interesting to see down the line. Like, it's hard to imagine, like, a 10-year contract, they're actually going to sign up for, I guess, hardware and support for that amount of time, but some of those machines haven't even been invented yet, so we'll see what happens at the end of that contract.
I think if there's anyone you can sign a 10-year contract with and be pretty confident they're going to be there with some new technology, it'd be IBM.
Yeah, IBM will be there. They'll give them something. So
it's not every computer company's 100 years old, right?
Exactly.
And, you know, with doing all this weather forecasting, it fits right in with Intel's theme. They must be doing this in the cloud.
Yeah, very good. Yeah. All right. Well, that was big news for this week, and we've been waiting for that one for God knows how long.
Check that one off the list. It's launched.
Check that one off the list. The next one we'll be waiting for is the AMD one for the second half of the year. They're going to come up with Abu Dhabi sometime after July, I guess, so we'll cover that as well. But until then, I think that'll probably be it for the chip announcements for a little while at least.
Yep.
Well, until then, we'll do it all again next week, Addison.
All right. Thanks, Michael. Talk to you later.
All righty.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.